Hello and welcome to episode 26 of the DX Mentor, all about CW Ops. Thank you for joining us. I'm Bill, AJ8B, the DX Mentor. I received a great email from Aaron, N6 Alpha Charlie Alpha, regarding the DX Mentor episodes. Aaron gave some excellent insight into the episodes and what we deliver each month. He's having great success and is moving towards DXCC. Aaron, please let me know when you hit 100 confirmed, and I'll let all of the listeners know as well, so congratulations on your progress. In this episode, we will attend a detailed discussion on the CW Ops organization. My guests are Joe, W-A-G-E-X, and Rob, K-6-R-B. The CW Ops organization consists of many facets, including promoting CW, the CW Academy, contests, awards for being on the air, and even scholarships. But we're going to learn all about that. When I joined in 2016, I was member number 1567. Now they have over 4,000 members, so we're doing something right. So let's tune into our gurus and find out what they're discussing, shall we? So good evening and welcome to the latest edition of the DX Mentor podcast. Tonight we're talking about one of the organizations that once I got involved with, I really went nuts with it. I promote them every chance I get. I think talk about positively impacting the hobby. This is that group. And one of my heroes and the guys that started it is with us. And I'm going to save his introduction for a minute. I usually have worked Rob many times, but it's usually for about 15 seconds on a Wednesday night. So and we'll explain all that later. So, but as always, I have Joe, W-A-G-E-X. And Joe, if you give us a brief intro, we'll get started.
Well, thanks, Bill. Nice to be your co-host tonight. I've been on, I'm going to do something a little different tonight. I've been on 62 D expeditions. Some of them were big groups, 15 and 20 people. And other times I was by myself. I've been lucky enough to get three D expeditions of the year award. One was for Midway. One was for Montenegro. And the last one was for Swains before this group went here a month or so ago. Been all over the Pacific doing D expeditions into the Caribbean and just had lots and lots of fun, and certainly encourage everyone, if you haven't been on a D expedition, and it seems like we all want to at one time or another, but I would highly encourage everybody to take your radio and some wire and an antenna and go to the Caribbean, but go someplace and be the DX. It's just overwhelming. I love it. Back to you, Bill.
Okay, great. Thanks, Joe. And our special guest tonight is Rob, K6RB. So, Rob, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, boy. okay, so I just turned 77, and it's been 65 years at the Key. I wow. started in 1958 at age 11 and a half, and I've been active all those years since. And, well, let's see, preferences. I tried everything in amateur radio for the most part over those years, DXing. I even did a D-expedition, Joe. I was at Shy Shy Mozambique with C-82DX. These days, my preference is to do CWTs every Wednesday and Regu. People say to me, how many countries do you have? And I go, I don't know. After I got my DXCCs in the 1980s, it was sort of like too much like work. So I just said, okay, I'm done. I got the paper and it's on the wall. I'm done. So I don't really chase DX, but I work a lot of it every year, in CQ Worldwide DX and ARRL DX, but I don't keep track. I once a year I throw everything in the logbook of the world and I don't keep track. So anyway, my two favorite things to do are CWTs, because they're short and snappy, and Raju.
Great. Well, one of the questions that we have a club member, NABJQ, I know you know Steve. And sure. The question I always had for Steve was, do you own a microphone?
So, Rob, do you own a microphone?
I actually do. It's attached to my headset. And I think it works. But there was a time where, when I first got licensed as a kid in 58, I got my general 7, 8 months later, and I built a modulator for my Viking Adventurer, and I went on AM phone, and I worked a taxi driver on 10 meters in Brooklyn. And it was like, wow, but for some reason, phone just never did it for me. Even later when I got into sideband, it just, I don't know, there was something of, maybe it was because you didn't really have to be challenged to do phone, whereas Morse code was a skill. I don't know exactly, but over the years, I've just kind of mostly focused on CW.
Okay. Well, the way we met, actually, the guy that got me involved in CW Ops was Jack, WZUCE.
Loved it.
And yeah, he was a
May he
great
rest in
guy.
peace. I love the guy.
Oh, and he heard I was working somebody else one night, and when I was done, he just sent my call and I responded. And so we started talking, and I said, hey, I don't remember what it was. It was almost midnight, I think. I said, I gotta go. And I hate to do that when we'd be on this. So he sent me his phone number. So I called him the next day. And Joe, this guy could, I think using stereo phones, he could probably track two CW QSOs at the same time in either ear and talk to you. And he was a high-speed CW trainer and handler for the Navy. I mean, he was absolutely the most amazing machine I've ever seen. He was just amazing
Yeah.
and a wonderful, wonderful guy. So he kind of got me hooked, and then it was easy. I mean, if Jack befriends you and gets you going, it's very hard to say no. So, but what he got me involved in was this thing we call CW Ops now. So, Rob, what can you tell us how CW Ops evolved in the
Yes, it's an interesting story. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, the way we're doing this, I'm not even going to share the screen and do slides. I'll just talk. Back in 2010, or actually slightly before 2010, 2009, November, there were about 10 or 12 of us who rag chewed and talked about all of the different things that were going on in clubs, fists, SKCC, FOC, this and that and the other. But we all had something in common. We were all CW operators. And we started talking about what are the good things and what are the not so good things about each club. And, club is a club. It's going to have its pros and it's going to have its cons. And when we got done talking about all of the good and bad, we started talking about, if we could start a club of our own from scratch, what would we do? And we started bouncing ideas around. And anyway, this was like November 2009. And one of us said, okay, I'm going to put together some bylaws. And somebody said, I'm going to do this. And somebody else said, I'm going to do that. And within weeks, we had this thing, and we decided that we wanted to start out with a critical mass. So what we did is each one of the 10 of us or whatever invited 10 people that we knew that were good CW operators to be founding members of CW Ops. And we ended up in a matter of toward the middle of December with over 100 members on paper.
right.
But we decided that we were going to launch the club on January 1, 2010. And we did. And at that point, we had, we said, okay, well, like FIS and SKCC, they don't have requirements. You don't have to be able to send with a straight key at a certain speed. You just have to pay the money and join the club. FOC, in contrast, was almost like joining a fraternity. You had to be selected. You had to go through a a pledging period kind of, and you couldn't ask somebody to support you because that would be an automatic rejection.
Right.
And some of us were FOC, but that part of it, we kind of all kind of, we'd heard enough people over the years say, oh, it's elitist and this and that. And we went, yeah, okay. Anyway, so we didn't want that. We didn't want that pledging kind of thing, sort of. But we did want to have minimum standards. So we selected 25 words a minute. If you can send and receive 25 words a minute, that's all you need to be able to do. And you don't have to rag chew, you don't have to DX, you don't have to contest. You can do whatever you want. If it's CW, we support it. So we went out in January 1, we launched the club. And boy, within about a month, we had, 200, 300 members, and it was really starting to gel. And right off the bat, they said, hey, we need to have some kind of on-air thing going on. And we need to do some other things. We had talked about different kinds of things, and you mentioned Jack Ritter. Jack and I put our heads together and we said, you know what? One of the things I want this club to do, unlike FOC, unlike these other clubs, is I want to set a high standard, but I want to offer anybody who's interested in joining a way to attain that high standard. So it isn't just picking the low-hanging fruit, it's cultivating the tree. Okay? And Jack, like you said, he taught Morse code. He was very together. The one thing missing with Jack was organization. You would say, Jack, we need to put a course together. And Jack would say, yeah, okay, great. And then I'd say, what do you think we should do? I don't know. Just do whatever, put it all together. And I go, okay. So I did. And so we decided we would have a class for intermediate level people that were below 25 and a class that would get you to 25 or faster. And we called it CW Academy. And we let the word out. It's free. It's online. All the materials are free. And Jack, I bless him for this idea. He pointed out that the problem that we were having in 2010 and even for many years prior to that was that if you had a radio club, a local radio club, and you wanted to teach people Morse code, they had to go there and practice and be physically in a building in a class doing stuff. Which is fine if you have enough people in a local area that are interested.
That's right, yeah.
But if you don't, what do you do? And Jack found this program, I think it was called OOVOO, OOVOO. And it's like Zoom,
Right.
but with more primitive. And it was free. And so we started doing teaching, where we would have five people and an advisor. We didn't call them an instructor, we called them an advisor. We had a curriculum, we had resources, assignments, and all this kind of stuff. And twice a week, typically Mondays and Thursdays around 7 p.m. local, I would meet with my five students and go through stuff and assess how they were doing and identify issues that were creating problems for them and offer them suggestions for what they could do to overcome them.
Right.
The classes were 8 weeks long, so two times a week times eight, 16 sessions. And a beginner who didn't know any Morse starting on week one, at the end of week eight, was able to send and receive, in some cases, 20 words a minute. In some cases, 15 or 12. Didn't matter. They learned the code. They learned to copy in their head. They learned to send. And they learned what you do in a QSO.
That last part. So I taught in six sessions, and I always wanted the introductory one because, A, I never felt like I was good enough to teach that next level, which But I enjoyed the heck out of that introduction. In fact, I've still got a couple of guys I exchange Christmas cards with to this day. So, but the point is, what I found out is once you took them through, here's how you do that. Here's how you send. Here's how you actually call CQ. Here's how you answer it. Here's how you conduct a Q. That confidence helped their ability to send and receive as much as
Absolutely.
just getting it on the key, right? So,
Absolutely.
and the one thing I remember Jack saying, he said, "Why do you get on there and just say name is?" And Jack would say, "My name is Jack." He said, "It's a conversation. Don't treat it
Yes.
like it's a chop. You're conversing with the other person." And there
Correct.
was so much of that you want to bring through to the students. And I assume that's still going on then. It's been a few years since I've been involved in the academy,
We
but
trained, I think the last time I heard, the number was something like 4,000 hams since
wow.
2010.
Yeah, because my number is 1567, and that was 6 years ago. And I think I worked a 3500 or something in
Yeah, I
the
worked
other
somebody
day.
the other day, 34, 49 or something.
Yeah.
We have well over 3,000 members in 103 countries. But
Wow.
CW Academy wasn't, you didn't have to be a member. In fact, you couldn't if you weren't at 25. So what the goal was to offer a class, beginner, intermediate, advanced, get them to a point where they could become a member and put the strong on them and say, hey, now that you're a member, do at least one semester of advisor for the next five guys or 10 guys, if you do two classes, and it became a self-perpetuating thing.
Yeah.
And now let's have a word from ICOM.
Hey, Bill, did you know that this winter you can make your gatherings merrier, your messages clearer, and your connections stronger with ICOM? Whether inside the ham shack or on the air in the great outdoors, they have the radio that every ham wants. From high-powered base stations and mobiles to compact, travel-friendly handhelds and portables, their radios offer features and functions such as spectroscope and waterfall displays, D-Star, sideband, CW, RTTY, AM/FM modes, and more. For the D-Star fans, ICOM's ID5100AD, ID50A, and ID52A are the perfect traveling companions. Bill, why don't you tell us a little bit about the ID5100AD?
Sure, Karen. The ID5100AD is innovation and mobility taken to the next level. Designed from user input, the ID5100AD offers an intuitive user interface experience with an industry-leading touchscreen display. This radio is one of the most advanced dual-band mobiles on the market today. It features intuitive touchscreen operation, integrated GPS receiver, DV/DV dual watch, DV/FM repeater list operation, and you can even get an optional VS3 Bluetooth headset.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. What about the ID52A?
Well, the ID52A is a VHF/UHF dual bander with D-Star and FM dual mode functions, and it's the first handheld amateur radio with full color 2.3-inch waterfall display. This radio supports conventional FM communications and D-Star simplex, repeater, regional, and worldwide calls over the D-Star internet gateway. Along with all that, you get wideband receiver with a guaranteed range of 144 to 148 megahertz and 440 to 450 megahertz. VV, UU, VU, and dual DV mode. Integrated GPS GLONASS receiver, including grid square location. And micro USB for data transfer, programming, and charging. The ID52A is a perfect companion to the IC705. Both use compatible batteries and headsets. And you can also use the same Android app for D-Star operation.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal, but I was also wondering about the ID50A.
Well, the ID50A gives hours of fun and enjoyment working your favorite bands. Beginners will love these features: easy D-Star settings, band scope with waterfall display, voice messaging, share picture function. And it uses the same optional accessories as the ID52A, the ID51A, and the ID31A.
Very interesting. I was also taking a peek at the IC905.
Well, the 905 is specifically detailed for the outdoor ham who loves POTA and SOTA activations. You can explore the world of microwave with ICOM's new SHF portable, the IC905. This all-mode rig covers 2 meters, 70 centimeters, 1.2 gig, 2.4 gig, 5.6 gig bands, and with the optional CX10G transverter, you can even cover 10 gigahertz. All of this comes with a large 4.3-inch touchscreen color display, real-time high-speed spectrum scope and waterfall display, easy digital mode settings, high-performance GPS antenna which is supplied, and full D-Star functionality in DVDD mode. You can aim higher by entering the world of SHF with the IC905.
Well, I also noticed that the IC7300 is one of the top choices. Maybe you better fill me in a little bit more about that option.
Well, the IC7300 is the rig I told you. I don't think a day goes by and I haven't worked somebody that's using an IC7300. It's the high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design that will far exceed expectations. This is an innovative HF transceiver that digitizes RF before various receiver stages, reducing the generated inherent noise in different IF stages. This is the radio that changed the way entry-level HF is designed, and that was because of several things. A large 4.3-inch touchscreen color display, real-time spectrum scope, and 15 discrete bandpass filters. The real HF fun starts here with the IC7300.
Well, and I took a peek and saw for the mobile and outdoors enthusiasts, the IC7100 seems to be ready for the road.
You know, it is. And for the mobile and outdoor aficionado, the IC7100 is road ready. Communicate with the touch of a finger. This compact base station is an ideal D-Star option to keep you connected anywhere. It features angled control head and touchscreen for quick, intuitive operation, large internal speaker for clear digital audio, one-touch selection, and it covers the HF, 50 megahertz, 144, 430, and 440 megahertz multi-bands on all modes. And I can tell you, after earning my mobile DXCC, all of these features are huge.
Well, if anybody is interested in more details, please check the show notes for links to your favorite products. Either at home or wherever you roam, Happy New Year from ICOM.
For the love of ham radio.
Rob, is there a charge to get into the membership?
Yes. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's a great question. So like I'm a member of FOC. I'm a member of the Northern California Contest Club, blah, 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 blah. And they have dues. And they used to send newsletters, and they used to, you know, FOC sends a magazine quarterly and a newsletter once a month. And we said, you know, it's 2010. There's a thing called internet. There's a thing called electronic documentation. Let's make this club based on internet and electronic documentation. Our newsletter is electronic. We don't send a piece of paper to anybody. Yeah. As a result of that, which is a huge cost factor for most clubs that are printing stuff, we were able to say from day one back then, if you want to become a member of CW Ops, you have a couple of choices. You can either pay the dues on an annual basis, which is $12 a year, but we offer a low interest rate mortgage if you want, you know, if you need it for the $12. But that was the thing. It was $12 a year. Oh, if you wanted to have 5 years, it was only $50.
Yeah.
And we said, if you want to be a member for life, it's a one-time $100. And if you live to be 114 and you're a member of the club for 60 years, you're going to make a lot of money on that deal. And trust, you know, truthfully, more than half of our members are life members.
I believe it. So just to be clear, though, that's a charge to join the club.
Yes.
But there's no fee if I want to enroll in CW Academy and go through the training.
Academy is free.
Yes.
And we have no on-air events that are exclusive to members. One of the things that people used to get their nose out of joint was the FOC had this thing called the marathon once a year. And if you were a non-member and you called somebody, sometimes you got, not a very polite response. And we didn't want that. We wanted everything that we did on the air is open to everybody. There's no, special points for members and different points for not. It's all totally egalitarian from day one.
So, Rob, what would you say makes the CW Academy way of teaching Morse code different than other approaches? I can remember like my dad taught me, and it was EISH and 5 and TMO and 0. And we had the big US Army Signal Corps machine with the tape that ran. And so that's how I learned it. And it was a challenge. But
Sure.
boy, when I went through the academy and teaching people the way we do it, I'm sure you can encapsulate it better than I could. So what makes it different?
Well, when we first offered CW Academy, we did not have a beginner class. And after a month or two of getting people signing up, 60 or 65% of our signups were beginners. So Jack said to me, "Rob, we need a beginner's class." And I said, "Oh, yeah, we do." And so he and I noodled a little bit, and I developed the curriculum for the beginner's class. And the way we did it, again, it's 8 weeks long, 16 sessions. The goal was to have you know all the letters, all the numbers by week 10, by week five,
Right.
session 10. So that the remaining six sessions, as you pointed out, Bill, were about what do you do with it now? How do you get on the air? How do you call CQ? How do you answer? What do you send? Blah, blah, blah. So the first 5 weeks are learning the code, and the last 3 weeks are learning what to do with it. Okay. So how about the structure of the learning the code part? Well, this again, Jack and I noodled back and forth about. And we both made the same decision. Look, as kids, when I learned Morse code, when I went to the FCC to get my general and all the other stuff, they didn't say, "Okay, we're going to send Morse code and then we're going to ask you some questions." They said, "Here's a piece of paper and a pencil. Copy what you hear." So you'd be writing. Like I would look at it, say, "Okay, you passed." Now, writing Morse code while you're copying is a throwback to the beginning of Morse of telegraph. The telegraph system was a system where you went to a telegraph office, you said, "I want to send this to Joe Blow at 123 Main Street, any town, USA, and I want it to say, 'Dear Joe, stop,' blah, 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 blah." And they would put all this stuff in, and they would take that written thing, give it to a kid with a hat and a bicycle, and send them to 123 Main Street. And it was that way, even in the 50s, the FCC was still treating it like a telegramic way of doing stuff. It was a way to send a written message. So it was important to be able to write it. But what's happened today, and I'm sure it's not news to you guys, is that that's not what we do with it anymore. We have a conversation. Now we're talking together now for several minutes. Are you taking notes? I'm not.
No.
So when I'm on Morse code and I'm talking to somebody, why would I take notes? It's a conversation. I'm listening to what he's sending and I'm interpreting it in my head, and I'm hearing a conversation. I don't need to take notes. So let's not teach people to copy and write. Why? Because when you're copying and writing, it slows you down. If you don't have to write, you can speed up. And I knew that even before we started CW Ops, because from 1958 to 1970, 12 years, I went from 5 words a minute to 20. And got my extra. From 1970 to 2010, okay, it's a long stretch.
Right.
I went from 20 to being able to copy call signs at 52 words a minute. And to be able to head copy conversational Morse code at 35 words a minute. How did I do that? I've put the pencil down.
Yeah, I noticed that with new, if you get a new student who's doesn't has never even gone into the world of CW, they don't know any different. So they're very easy to teach. Here's, but you get another student, he's been a ham for 10 years, he remembers when he first got into it, he struggled with, and you say, okay, well, I don't want any pencils on your desk. They freak out.
Oh,
Oh, I'll
I need
never
my
be able to learn this. Like, no, you
pencils.
really can. We want to help you.
So anyway, when we decided how we were going to break the class the first 5 weeks down, I said to Jack, here's my idea, Jack. Let's do session one with four letters. E, T, A, and N. With those four letters, I can spell eat, eight, ten, neat, teen. I can spell a bunch of words. I can even do short sentences. Eat at 10, ate at 10, you know. So the very first week of being trained, you're hearing E, T, A, and N at 20 words a minute. You're copying words, short words, and short sentences. So the very first experience you have is one of success. What about the second meeting that week? What do we do then? Well, we add a couple more letters, O, I, S, and R, and two numbers, one and four. Why not one and two? It's very systematic. Numbers are systematic. Dit da 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 da, did it da da da, did it da da. I don't want you sitting there and going, was that three dits or two dits? I
Right.
want you to hear the character. So one and four, you hear the number. You're not sitting there processing dits and das. Now think about that. This is week one, second session. You know N. You know T, you know E, you know O, you know I, you know S, you know R. Guess what? I can now start sending call signs. N1EA. N4AT. So I can get them by the end of the first week, not only finding words and short sentences, but call signs. And it just gets on, it just goes on from there. We
And I
add
think an
more stuff.
important point is you're sending the characters at 20 words a minute, but the space is not 20 words a minute.
It's Farnsworth.
Right. So they get used to that quick burst, but then they have time to process. It isn't like you're just throwing up. What a difference that makes.
And you want to shorten that Farnsworth up over time so that by the time they get to the end of the 8 weeks, they're copying 20 words a minute. With no Farnsworth delay. That's your goal. Do you achieve it? Yeah, I got close. 15, good enough.
Right.
But the point is, yes, we don't want the letters slowed down. That's a big mistake I think the FCC and ARRL made from for half a century or a century. When you copy 5 words a minute proportionately, where the letters are sent at 5 words a minute, it's eye-glazingly slow, and it allows you to start thinking dot dash dot dot oh L da dit da oh yeah K. Whereas I don't want you thinking that at all. I want you to hear the sound of the letter da 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 K the da 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 L, and that's what by sending it 20 words a minute you achieve because you can't count at that speed. They've even raised it since then. Now they're going 25 words a minute with the letters. Again, to make it understandable, it's a character recognition thing. That's what you want. You want the person to hear the letter sound. And usually what happens is, I've taught beginner, middle, advanced, and so forth. And I'll get a student who is copying the letters and all that good stuff. And then I'll send a short phrase and they'll say, I don't get it. And I'll kind of work with them and I'll say, here, let's try something. John, okay. I'm going to say something to you and I want you to tell me what I said. He says, okay. And so I'll do something like this. THECATWALKS. The cat walks. I go, right. You know why you were able to do that? And I said, by the way, that was about 28 words, 30 words a minute. He goes, really? Yep. And I said, you know why you can do that? Because when I say T, you see the T. When I say H, you see the H. When I say E, you see the E. If you don't learn code the right way, when I send DAW, your brain has to go DAW, T, D-D-D-D, H, D, E. But over time, as you work on it and recognize the sound of those letters, it's just the same as me saying THECATWALKS. And he got it. He got it.
And when the light comes on, it's cool.
Was able to copy anything I could throw at him because he got it. And that's the key. That is the key. If you can get that instant character recognition down tight early on, you're going to be solid.
Yeah, and there is a phobia because when you get people on there, they say, well, I'll never do 20 words a minute. So, well, I see you have a 2 meter radio. Can you get the calls on the repeat? Oh yeah, well, that's 20 words a minute, folks. I mean, so CW Academy it's just brilliant. I went through it. I've been in it. It is just absolutely off scale. It's just one of the great things.
Let's take a break to learn about the Daily DX.
Hey, I just poured you a cup of coffee. You look pretty happy. How'd you do?
I worked him on the third call. Can you believe it?
You worked him on the third call? Seriously? I thought you just had that little pistol station.
I do, but I have a secret weapon.
A secret weapon? What is it?
Information. I knew when they were on the air, their operating habits. Heck, I even knew the equipment they're using. I just had to be there when they came up on the band. I even beat the spotting network.
Wow, how'd you manage all that?
I get the Daily DX from Bernie, W3UR. In addition to the weekly and daily bulletins, I also receive special notices when things change in real time. I feel that I'm always on top of every DXpedition.
So now you just need to confirm it, right?
Yep, that's it. Bernie even helps me with that, giving me QSL routes and QSL managers if they don't use LOTW. The Daily DX is a DX bulletin sent via email to you Monday through Friday. It includes DX news, IOTA news, QSN reports, QSL information, a DX calendar, propagation forecast, and much, much more. With a subscription to the Daily DX, you will also receive DX news flashes and other interesting DX tidbits. Bernie's been an integral part of my confirming over 300 entities and WAZ while operating a modest station.
W3UR Bernie is the editor, a member of the DX Honor Roll, a member of the 3000 Challenge Club, as well as the editor of the How's DX column in QST. He is uniquely positioned to have his finger on the pulse of the DX community and shares this information weekly. Why not let Bernie be your secret weapon?
You can get a free 2 week trial at www.dailydx.com.
Now let's go have that cup of coffee and tune around.
So let's switch a little bit. Let's talk about CWTs.
Okay, so like I said, we in the very early stages, we said we need an online event. And we also need to teach people how to become a member, how to get to 25. Those were two important goals. The third goal was we need an annual real contest that logs must be submitted and adjudicated, and there needs to be awarded, prizes awarded, blah, blah, blah. So let me go back, let me go to CWT. I'm a very good at borrowing good ideas. I like to be original, but I think it's original to borrow a good idea and modify it. So what was the good idea I borrowed for CWT? Not just me, KZ5D was working with me on that art. And for years at that point, the Northern California Contest Club, every Thursday night, put on a half-hour session called NS, NCCC Sprint. It was just like the, North American Sprint, same kind of thing. And they did it for a half an hour on a Thursday night. So I said to Art, why don't we do a one-hour thing on a Wednesday? And he goes, okay. And I said, we'll do it on the first Wednesday of the month. Good. Okay. So we did it. We came up with a format and an exchange, and we called it CWT. That was Art came up with that idea. And the exchange was really easy. Your name and your member number. And if you weren't a member, your name and your state or province or whatever country. And in the beginning, when we would do that, and I got to add something else. We, from day one, decided we were going to make this a regional thing. So they had one at 1300 Zulu, which is on morning in California. Nope, that one is for the guys in Asia. Okay, and the only bands you can use 40, 80, and 160. 1900, that's Europe. 80, 40, 80, and 160. And then 0300, that's the US and Canada and North America, 40, 80, and 160. And so what would happen is you'd get on in your slot, and there would be a whole bunch of people doing it with you by a whole bunch of people. The band looked semi busy. At the end of an hour, if you worked 35 guys, you had a good night. Little by little, stuff started to happen. We didn't make it hard and fast that you couldn't do the other sessions if you wanted to. And I was getting pushed by members to, why is it only 40, 80, and 160? Why don't you make it 10, 15, 20, 40, and 160 at any session? And anybody can do any session if they feel like it. So we did. So again, it was still once a week, three different times that day, but it was wide open. And all of a sudden, instead of 35 in an hour, you had 73 or 80. And it got real popular, real fast, to the point where now AA3B, in the course of 1 hour at 0300 Zulu, using single operator two radio and dual CQ, he'll do 268 QSOs.
Yeah, he's a nut. I love listening to him.
He's a great operator. Bud's a terrific guy. I'm SO1R. And I've been shooting for 200 QSOs in one session. And I got as close as 192. I'm still working on it. But it's so much fun. It's an hour of exhilarating fun. And your speed goes up. And you know these guys. You work the same guy six times that day. And every week you work him again. And he knows you. You know him. You run into him at Dayton. He knows you. You know him. It's fabulous. It's really, it's not only contest, it's social. You're friends. Okay. I get emails from people that I work in CWTs all the time because we know each other. And in other contests, sweepstakes CW. I'll work somebody who I've worked in CWT. To you, Rob.
Yeah, and that's 100% right. Like CQ Worldwide DX, I couldn't believe all the guys I knew. And I was surprised how many knew me. It was like, oh, they
You
know who I
bet.
am.
Yes.
How
So, I
cool
mean,
is that?
there's all these side benefits that you get from doing things these ways. Anyway, so that's the CWT. Do you have a question about that? Anything about that, Bill or Joe?
Yeah. So that led then, I think, to the CW Open, which I think is one of the most fun contests in the year.
Okay. Yes, we said let's work on getting something that's real, that's sponsored, that has software for doing, log checking, et cetera, et cetera. So the CW Open, again, it was, I think, me, Art, Rusty W6OAT, Al AD6E. We kind of colluded, worked together, come up with something that did the job. And one of the things that I was very adamant about, because I, even though, yeah, I know contests have classes, low power, medium, high power, some will even have wires, gain antennas. I wanted it possible for an operator operating at 100 watts with a wire antenna to score in the top 10 of the world. How do you do that? Well, if you make the Molts another continent, that means you need power and you need gain if you're going to do well. So let's forget that. Let's make the Molt a new unique call sign. So if I work Bill, I get a Molt. If I work Joe, I get a Molt. If I work a guy who's 3 blocks away from here, I get a Molt. And those Molts are all equal. So that was the first part. And we do that in CWT as well, by the way. So that was one. We wanted a 24-hour program, but we wanted it broken down into 4-hour sessions separated by significant amounts of time. And the reason for that is the weekend that we do CW Open, the first weekend in September, also happens to coincide with Memorial Day. So people go to their husband, if you think you're going to be sitting at that radio all day today, you can just forget about that, honey. Don't worry about it. I'm going to be up at 5 in the morning and I'll be done at 9. And he'll do one session. And you know what's neat? Each session is separately scored and awarded. So if I do 1 out of 3 and I do well, I get a certificate or a trophy or a plaque. That's all I need to do is 4 hours. If I do 3 of them, 4, 4, and 4 for 12 hours, there's a fourth category where it aggregates the three, and you could even win a trophy for aggregate score. So this thing is really neat. And then the other thing that we did to kind of make things equal is we said, when you're doing CW Open, even though you're playing with everybody in the world, your score is not being reflected against the whole globe. It's being reflected against your zone, so zone 1, zone 2, or zone 3. So if I'm in California, my score isn't going to be compared to somebody in Europe or somebody in Japan. It's going to be compared to people in the United States. The guy in Japan, his score is being compared to people in Asia. And the guy in Europe, zone 1, he's being compared to other people in Africa and Asia, Africa and Europe. So not only does each session get separately awarded and scored, but each session gets awarded 3 different ways, zone 1, zone 2, zone 3. What a concept.
So if you take that and what I think CW Ops has done a great job of is that you feel like you can accomplish something. So I got to tell you, I never thought I was that competitive, but as I started doing the CWTs, it's like I couldn't wait to be done and then jump out the 38-30 scores and put it out there. And I just, and not that I would be at the top, but it was like, okay, I was at, I had 50 last time and I got 75 this time. So what is it going to take me to get to 100 or whatever? So you start
Exactly.
competing against yourself. So the other thing that I think is brilliant and I have not taken advantage of is the QTX. So the actual QSOs is, and there's ribbons for that and medallions. So can you talk about that?
We decided with CWT, because it's not scored, you don't send in a log, you send a summary report. And, maybe you made a mistake in your summary report. So it doesn't matter. What matters is we have a gold, silver, and bronze medallion, and it's not based on the score you made. It's based on how many sessions you took part in the year. So if you did an X number of sessions in 2023, you got a gold medal. And that gold medal is the exact same one that AA3B gets with his gazillions of CUSOs. So it's really a participation award as opposed to a score award. With QTX, similar kind of thing. You get on the air, you make a rag chew, you spend X number of minutes, you get a point. And again, at the end of the year, they add up all the points and go, if you got at least this many points, you get a gold, you get a silver, you get a bronze. So we wanted to encourage people to participate without making it, killer competitive. And I think we succeeded.
I think you have to.
Let's pause for a minute to hear from one of our great sponsors. I've been talking about DX engineering for quite a while, and I thought it would be better to have someone who is an avid user and appreciates all that DX engineering does and Tim Duffy does for the ham community. So here's Paul, N6PSE, as he's preparing for his H40 Whiskey Alpha D-Expedition.
There's some really terrific organizations and companies out there that sponsor our de-expeditions that really bolster our abilities and really add to that success factor. Tim Duffy and the great folks at DX Engineering are second to none. Just amazing people. And when we contact them, they are very generous and really help us a lot.
Thanks, Paul, for your honest reflection on DX engineering and how they affect the ham community, and good luck on your upcoming H40 Whiskey Alpha D expedition.
One of the things you mentioned was the newsletter, and it is really good. And I've been honored to have a couple of things published in there, but it's a really good newsletter. And Dick allows me occasionally to steal something out of there and do it in our Swedexa newsletter. How did that evolve? Because it really is good. It's a really good newsletter.
Yeah, this was one of those things where, again, just before we launched, somebody said, hey, we ought to have some kind of thing where once a month you get a newsletter. Okay. And they said, Rob, you know how to do online publishing, right? And I said, yeah, sort of. And they said, why don't you take a cut at it? Frame something up. And I said, okay. And I said, the mistake that I see a lot of these people make is that they emulate a newspaper, multi-column, which makes sense in a newspaper. It doesn't make sense when you're scrolling a screen. So instead of multi-column, every page is one column. Number two, you gotta have a name for it. And we were batting around a bunch of names, and I said, what about solid copy? Oh, that's a great name. Boom. It's still the name we have. I actually did the publishing of that newsletter for the first, I don't know, 3 years, 4 years, whatever. If you go back to the earliest ones, you'll see that I was doing it. It's a much better newspaper now than it was back then. Tim, who was doing it before, K9 UXE or whatever his call sign is, WX, K9 WX, did a fabulous job. And the new guy and 9EEE is doing a fabulous job. And what I love about it, what's really significantly novel, and by the way, FOC is copying it now, is the new member biographies. Yes,
that is so cool.
It's really cool.
I got a couple questions, Rob.
Yes.
Talking about your newsletter, so do you have to be a member of CW Ops to get it, or can...
Go to the website, go to the newsletter, go to the year, month, click on it, boom. It's okay. On your screen.
And for our listeners, what's the website?
www.cwops.org.
Good.
And I'll have that in the show notes. So.
And then another question I had while you was talking earlier about power. For our listeners, again, to do CW, what's your recommendations on power?
You know, that's a really good question. And one of the things that I do when I talk about different modes of ham radio is I talk in terms of, my background is physics and electrical engineering. So I talk in terms of communications theory, which says that signal to noise ratio is critical to being able to decipher what's being sent. Now, how wide does the bandwidth have to be to hear a Morse code signal? Could be as narrow as 30 hertz, 50 hertz. Let's be conservative, say 100 hertz. Okay, 100 hertz, you can hear it perfectly. What about a single sideband signal? In order to understand what is coming out, there's some argument about whether it's 1200 hertz or 1500 hertz. Let's say 1200. RIDI. How wide does a RIDI bandwidth have to be? 200 hertz for the standard RIDI. Maybe 250 if you want to edge it out a little bit, but 200. Okay, so let's look at those numbers. Morse code, 100. RIDI, 200. Phone, 1200. The one thing that is the gospel in communications theory is the wider the bandwidth, the greater the noise. So if I have a CW signal with a bandwidth of 100, it's easier to hear my signal at 100 watts than it would be if I was running phone at 100 watts in a bandwidth of 1200, or running RIDI at 100 watts in a bandwidth of 200. Because RIDI is twice as noisy and phone is 12 times as noisy. So I need to get my signal level above the noise, higher with phone, somewhat less with RIDI, and the least with Morse code.
Mm-hmm.
So it's efficient. It's an amazingly efficient thing. There was you might have seen this, Bill. Somebody posted something on the Reflected the other day, excuse me, saying they were working 5 watts on 40 and working people in the other continent. Try that with sideband sometime.
Yeah,
it's a bit more of a...
Or even RIDI. So, you know, on top of the fact that it's a challenge, it's a skill, it's fun to learn, it's fun to use, it's efficient. It really has a usefulness. So I don't have to make an argument about why I operate CW, because all of the numbers are in my favor.
Right. One of the questions I had that's a legitimate question, I don't know, is in the newsletter, you know, there's a list of CW ambassadors. So what is their role? I think that's a really interesting concept, if I understand it the way I think I do, but you know, what is the role of a CW ambassador?
So let's say you're in Western Europe and you're interested in this crazy group of people that you heard about called CW Ops, and you'd like to find out more about it. Well, if we only had one person in the globe who was the keeper of all things important, it would be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But by having ambassadors located in key areas of the globe, if I'm in Australia, there's somebody close to home I can talk to and find out about. If I'm in Japan, you know, JN1THL, whatever. The ambassador's role is to just be the local guy and answer all your questions.
Okay.
What about CW Academy? Well, what do you need to, what would you like to do? Blah, blah, blah. How does this CW Open thing work? Blah, blah, blah. How do I get into the club? What about giving back, which is that volunteer program during the week where people everywhere in the world that want to volunteer get on the air at 7 p.m. local on 40 or 80, depending on the time of year, or 20 and 40, depending on the time of year, and just do QSOs, conversational QSOs.
Yeah, that was next on my list.
And that, and you could get a QTX point if it's 20 minutes or longer. You could get an MTX point if it's 10 minutes or longer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like you're getting twofers, right?
Right, right.
And the beauty of it is when you're learning CW Academy and your instructor, your advisor says to you, you know, I'd like you during the week to see about, you're at a point now where you should be able to make some QSOs. And they go, yeah, but, you know, well, wait a minute. There's a giving back program. Look at the schedule of who's going to be on tonight, tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. Looks like the guy that's closest to you is on Thursday night at 7 p.m. There's his call sign. Why don't you try and work him? On-air practice.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Well, and so the last thing I had was when you're talking about giving back, isn't there also a scholarship program?
Yes. Because we have kept our costs so low, even though the dues are not high, we've accumulated a reasonable treasury. And quite frankly, even if we sponsor, you know, CW contest trophies and all this other stuff and pay all the costs associated with CW Academy and Zoom and all the other things, it's tiny. So there's money. So why not use it? Why not use it to promote ham radio among young people? So we did. We created a scholarship program. But unlike the scholarship program of the ARRL, where technically I could get a scholarship and the only thing I've ever done is FT4. Here, it's skewed towards CW. I mean, if you want to get a scholarship, that's fine. You can do other things. You can do FT4 and FT8, but you got to do CW too. Oh, okay. Well, you know, that creates a need and helps to build up some support. The other thing is that we found, and this goes back years ago, many, many years ago, when I was first starting to think about, you know, I'm getting old and this hobby is aging. How do we get young people to pick it up again? When I was a kid, 58, everybody was a teenager. You know, the oldest guy was 35. Nowadays, the average age is 50s and 60s and up. So how do we rejuvenate this thing? How do we get kids involved so that it doesn't die with us? And I thought about that and I said, you know, I'm not sure. Anyway, one day my next door neighbor's kid, Greg, comes over and he'd like to go out in the backyard with my wife and help her weed and do some stuff. And he says to me, hey, Rob, you were going to show me that radio thingy. I said, hey, Greg, when you're done in the backyard, Come on in.
But not till
Oh,
you're
man.
45 minutes later, Greg comes on in. I sit him down. I turn on the radio. And at that point, I'm thinking, let's start with phone. So I rummage around in a drawer, look for a microphone, put a speaker on, and I get on 20-meter sideband. And first call, somebody in Europe. And I talk to the guy and I put Greg on, he say hello, blah, blah, blah. So, okay. And so, you want to see how the Morse code thing works? He goes, yeah. I go, okay. I flip to mode. I hear a W5 calling CQ. I call him. I'm interpreting. This guy's call is such and such. He's in Dallas, Texas. His name is Jim. He telling me this, and I told him that you're a visitor in the shack. I told him your name. He says, hi, Greg, blah, blah, blah. And I got it over with fairly quickly. And I just sat there and I looked at him and I said, so what do you think, Greg? He goes, oh, Rob, that is so incredible. And I go, you like that, huh? He goes, yeah. And you know what my favorite part is? I go, no, what? He goes, the Morse code thing. And I went,
Yeah.
why? And he said to me, because it's like texting, only it's secret.
Well,
And I, to your point, one of the videos I love showing, and Joe, I don't know if you've ever seen this. You remember Chip Margolis? Well, Chip
sure.
and another ham, and I can't recall who it was, they were on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Yes.
And they brought out the two kids that had just won the International Texting Championship. And Chip and this other guy sent the message faster
With
than the
Morse code.
texters could. And they were
Absolutely. It
stunned.
was great. That's a great video. But you know what's interesting is when I was a kid, what was the magic? Was it Morse code? No, it was radio, wireless. I'm able to hear signals coming out of the ether. That was the magic. Nowadays, the kid says, transceiver, I got one in my pocket. Radio, big deal. Wi-Fi. The Morse code is the magic. And the kids that are going up on doing POTA and SOTA, they don't want to carry a 10-pound radio and a computer. They want to carry something that fits in a deltoid can, runs a watt, throw a wire up in a tree, and I can talk to 20 people in 40 minutes. How do you do that? Morse code.
Let's
pause so we can hear from a DX club that is one of our sponsors.
DXing is even more enjoyable when you make connections with other DXers. A major sponsor of this podcast is the Southwest Ohio DX Association, or SWODEXA. SWODEXA is best known for hosting the DX Dinner and DX Forum, as well as the DXpedition of the Year Award. All these DX events are held annually in conjunction with Hamvention and are among the most well-attended and notable DX events of the year. Joining SWODEXA will give you access to a great group of DXers, an informative newsletter, preferred seating at the DX Dinner and the DX Forum, and you will be supporting DXpeditions to the top 50 needed DXCC entities. Check us out at www.swodxa.com and click on the membership info tab for more information and a registration form.
What do you think of Joe and I have this idea of breweries on the air? What do you think of that?
Hey, whatever floats your boat.
Well, Joe, did you hit? Go ahead.
Rob, talking about your scholarship, I assume that the application again is on the website.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, in fact, I'll double check and put a link to
Well,
that.
I'm always concerned when we do these that the listener, understands, where to get information on the website or
Sure.
where. Sure.
Sure. Yeah, I think the scholarship is definitely on the website and the application's on the website. I don't have a lot to do with it. I had a lot of other things that I did from day one. My plate was more than full. So it's like, okay, yeah, you want to do this? It's fine. Find somebody else.
Well,
So I haven't
I
really
will tell
gotten
you,
involved in that.
from a personal standpoint, you guys do so many things right. Or I guess I should say we do so many things right. And an example of that was after my sixth session, you know, I was ready to do number seven. And I came home from work one day, and there was this really nice plaque. Thank you for doing your first six sessions. This is, and it's up. Well, you can't see it. I got the background, but it's right up there. When you come in the room, you can't miss it. It was like, I didn't know I was doing this. I didn't know I was working for it. This is so cool. It's a real, and I see that across the board. There's just all kinds of things you do to make everybody feel appreciated in what they're doing.
Well, look, you know, if you're teaching or instructing or advising three times a year, at least one session a semester three times a year. I was doing three at one point.
Wow.
That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
Sure.
And you're not getting anything for it. So how about a token of appreciation in the form of a service award?
So how many of you coordinate log checking, sending out awards? You got to make the awards, you got to order them and so forth. So how many people are involved in the day-to-day operation of CWOps?
Boy, that's a great question. With regard to the medallions that I was talking about for CWT and QTX, the guy who is the manager of CWT, VE3KI, Rich, he's the one who at the end of December next month will post in the newsletter who qualified. Mm-hmm. There's another guy, I forget his call sign, who does the QTX, I think it's an Italian call. He's the one who keeps track of the points and tells me who the winners are for those. I then order a sufficient number of the right amount of gold, silver, and bronze from a company in China. They all come to me. Then I sit down and I take the member data sheet and I go through and I eliminate everybody who didn't win. So I have just the winners on the data sheet with their address, and I get rid of all the other columns and I create a label sheet. Then I take these little plastic envelopes that don't tear.
Yeah.
I put one in the envelope and seal it, put a label on, stamp it, bring it to the post office. I do that every year. That's just for the medallions. With the service awards for CW Academy, it was AAATA who was running it. He had a problem. His wife got sick, and now he's not involved in it. And I think right now it's WR7Q who is overseeing it. And he, again, he'll send me annually, here are all the people that qualified for service awards. I then go to the vendor and order the awards and have them sent to those people. Mm. There may be some other things that I'm not even aware of that other people are doing, but those are the things that I'm doing.
Yes. Okay.
And I know there's probably a half a dozen people that manage the newsletter.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's a very, very solid volunteer, aggressive organization, which is great.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And 3,000 members. That's impressive.
It's probably closer to four now, Rob.
It may be, you know, yeah. Very possible.
So is there still a queue to get into CW Academy? I mean, at one point it was, you know, 6 months or so.
I don't think so. It used to be almost a year.
Okay.
Now it's, I think, you know, if you sign up for it a month before the session starts, you'll get in.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, we all remember when they took away the no code code requirement, and there were a lot of folks saying gloom and doom and sell your bug and your kit. And heck, I think looking at CQ Worldwide stats and what you guys are doing, I mean, it may be more popular now than it's been in 20 years.
Well, you know, I always like to tell people the story. I said, you know, back in the early 1900s, late 1800s, when they finally were able to put a steam engine in a ship, a metal ship, everybody said the same thing. They see the Naval Academy and the Coast Guard Academy stop teaching you how to sail. Obsolete. You don't know how to. You don't have to learn how to sail. You have this thing. Put coal in it. takes you wherever you want to go. And I said, do you know that today, and this was true 20 years ago, today there are more boats under sail than in the entire history of the world?
Wow.
Really? Right. You know why? No. They're not carrying stuff. No one's sending stuff from continent to continent with a sailboat. They do it because it's fun and it's challenging and it's a skill and it's fun. And they go, okay. And I said, guess what? CW, it's like sailing. You can take away the need for it, but people are going to want to do it anyway. And like Bill said, the numbers are going up, not down.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yes. Joe, anything else?
No, very, very interesting, Rob.
Thank you.
Yes. Well,
your passion is just, I'm literally sitting here thinking, I got two newsletters that I do, and I've got the president of this club here, but could I fit in, you know, a training session again on Monday and Thursday? What would care? And that's literally what I'm thinking, like, you know, I want to do this. Like, the only thing I was disappointed in the entry-level academy would be those students that would, you know, would be the second and third session. You're like, okay, how much time did you spend though? Oh, I didn't really practice at all. It's like, okay, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a guitar. I'm going to teach you a chord. And I want you to come back in a week and play that chord and the other one I taught you without picking up the guitar. Well, I'd never do that. Well,
yeah.
So there is a little of that, but.
Yeah, you know, and we realized that early on when we said it's free. And people said, yeah, well, you know, if it's free, then that's what people value it at. And there are going to be people that are going to sign up that are going to just think they're going to coast through. And when I would have my first session, especially with the beginners, I would be very, very straightforward. I'd say, look, if I could invent a pill that you could take and tomorrow you'd wake up and you'd be able to send and receive Morse code at 25 words a minute, I'd do it. And I'd sell it for a lot of money. But I said, there is no pill. You know how you get Morse code in your head and you gain the skill? You put it there. I don't put it there. You put it there. If you don't give it a sufficient amount of time, you're not going to get there.
Yeah.
And then during the course, I was lucky. I was blessed. I had a lot of students that were very motivated. I didn't have too many people that, you know, I had to speak to offline, but I had some. And what I would do is say, look, you know, clearly you're having a problem and let's see if we can get to the bottom of it. And it would turn out that, oh yeah, I try to spend a half an hour a day, an hour a day, but sometimes I, you know, the work gets in the way, this and that. I go, yeah, I get that. But the truth of the matter is you're going to be spending a total of 8 weeks in this thing. If you don't put the time in, it's a waste of your time.
That's right.
That usually was sufficient to turn things around.
Yeah.
I have to tell you one funny story. I was teaching an intermediate class. So I had my five students, and one of whom was up in Oregon or Washington. He was 84 years old. I should talk, I'm 77. 84. And the way I would always do my first session is I would say, okay, Jim, I'm going to send you a little something. Just tell me what I sent. And I would just assess, find their sweet spot. So when I get to this guy, Dave, I said, Dave, I'm going to send you a little something and you tell me what I sent. And I'd send him something. He goes, Rob, I have no idea what you sent. And I think I'm in over my head. I should probably quit right now. And I said, Dave, you can't quit in my class. It's not allowed. And he said, well, you know, I said, Dave, you can't quit. Once you join my class, you're in it. And he said, okay. And with not very much prompting after that, he was the second best in the class.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he wanted it bad enough. Well, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Rob, what would you summarize, or what message do you want our listeners to come away with tonight?
Ham radio is an incredible hobby. Like I said, I'm 77. I'm trying to think if there's any other activity that I've ever done in, aside from ham radio, that I've been doing for 65 years. And the answer is no. Now, when I first got into it, did I have any idea that I would be a lifer?
Right.
No. Yep. And I didn't sugarcoat any aspects of it for myself to make it more palatable. I just tried different things and I gave myself the freedom to do what I liked and not do what I don't want, like. So ultimately, this being emerged that likes to rag chew and likes to do short, snappy contests. I would never tell somebody who's a diehard DXer, oh, that's such a waste of time. No, it's not. If that person enjoys it, gives them satisfaction, God bless them. And if somebody said to me, oh, contesting, yuck, yeah, I don't want to do that, that's fine. You don't have to. When I teach my intermediate and advanced, and I'm explaining the nature of the class, I go, look, it's going to be 8 weeks long, and the goal is to have a balance of head copy, head sending, conversational Morse code skills, and exchange copy, keyboard entry, contesting skills. They're different. And they go, I'd usually get one guy say, I'm not interested in rag chewing. I'm just a contester. I go, okay, but I still want you to do them both. He goes, why? I said, look, I don't want you ever, 5 years down the road, to tell somebody, yeah, I took this training class and I never learned how to do conversational Morse code. That's different than saying, I learned how, but I didn't use it.
Right.
So what I want you to come out of this with is those two skill sets, whether you use them or not, I don't care. That's your choice. But you're not going to get out of here without those two skill sets. They would go, okay, okay. And invariably, guys, the guy who said, oh, I don't like contesting, became a diehard contester. Yeah. And the guy who said, oh, I don't like rag chewing, suddenly I'm working this guy, you know, every second week in giving back. You just don't know.
No, you don't know. Right. Well, Rob, I am absolutely thrilled that you were able to carve some time out. Your passion is just infectious. And I know we'll get some signups and some interest and stuff out of this. And if nothing else, if somebody says, yeah, okay, I kind of remember the code, I'll get on 40 meters and see that would be great.
Yes.
So I appreciate
Put it in your newsletter, Rob.
I'll send something.
Yeah. That we did this podcast and maybe we'll get 3,000 listening.
I'll let Dick know that we did it and he'll probably put it in the next issue. And if there's a URL, people will be able to look at it and see the crazy stuff I say.
Well, it's certainly nice running with you. Nice to meet you tonight. And good luck to you. And Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Now, Rob, do you see yourself coming to Dayton anytime in the next couple of
years? I'm going to be there in May.
Okay. All right.
For sure. I missed it last year because I was in Israel helping a client introduce a product to its market. But this year, nothing's getting in my way.
So I know there's a CW Ops dinner. Is that normally Thursday night?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, okay. So we have the DX dinner on Friday night and the DX forum on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So if you find out you're going to be around either one, I'd love to meet you and buy you a cup of coffee. And
Well, I'm sure I'll see you in Xenia at the booth or whatever. So
We'll make sure we come by the booth and hassle you a little bit. I've got my little pin. I'll wear my pin, you know. So. Well, thanks again. Merry Christmas. And by golly, it was terrific. And if there's anything we can do to help, let us know. We'd be happy to do it.
Yes, sir. Please do.
All right.
Very good. Well, it was great meeting you guys and enjoy your holidays and I'll see you soon.
Okay, Rob. Thanks so
much. Sounds
good. Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Did you learn something new? I certainly did, and I've been a member for 7 years, almost 8. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the DX Mentor Podcast. I would like to thank our sponsors, ICOM America, The Daily DX, DX Engineering, and the Southwest Ohio DX Association. You won't find anyone more committed to DX than these sponsors. I would especially like to thank our gurus, Joe, WAGEX, and Rob, K6RB. I would love to have your feedback, answer your questions, and provide help with any DX or amateur radio issues that you may have. If you need clarification on something or you just have a question, please email me at thedxmentor@gmail.com. You can also drop me a line if you've achieved an all-time new one, receive recognition, or have a DX event that you would like us to mention. We would be happy to do that. 7-3 for this episode, and thanks to my XYL Karen for her love and support. I'll see you in the pileup.